This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will talk about the MLK Day holiday with Albert Samuels, professor at Southern University. Also, Dr. Samuels will opine about Louisiana politics, much happening in 2014, and we'll look at the dust-up with New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. Can the big guy survive the Bridgegate scandal? Also, what's happening with St. George? Will that be the biggest story in 2014? And we'll visit with Kevin Kane of the Pelican Institute of Public Policy in New Orleans. He'll have some thoughts about Louisiana politics from a conservative vantage point. And we'll talk with Kevin Kane about the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., his holiday celebrated today. Now the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your local number if you'd like to join us today. And we invite you to call 877-217-5757 if you're dialing outside the Baton Rouge calling area. And we may be reached by email inkstershow@wrkf.org. Michael Farrar producing. And the Super Bowl is set in 13 days in the New York suburbs in New Jersey. It'll be the Seattle Seahawks meeting the Denver Broncos in Super Bowl 48. Seattle winning a close one, 23-17 at home over San Francisco, and Denver prevailing at home over the New England Patriots, 26-16. So Peyton Manning leads Denver to the Super Bowl. The New Orleans native will try to become the ninth quarterback, at least nine times, that a Louisiana native has led his team to victory in a Super Bowl, more than any other state. And Peyton Manning, of course, was born in New Orleans, already has one Super Bowl victory to his credit. His brother Eli has two, as does Doug Williams and Terry Bradshaw, who won four times quarterbacking the Pittsburgh Steelers. And we, of course, will follow that story, and I'm sure WRKF will through the services of National Public Radio, as Super Bowl 13 is not so far away. Super Bowl 48, 13 days away. With us to start today's show on MLK Day is Albert Samuels, the professor of political science at Southern University. Good morning, Dr. Samuels.
Good morning, Jim, and a happy King Day to you.
Happy King Day to you, to a man who was born on Bobby Jindal's birthday, Albert Samuels. 6'10", 66. So you were only, well, 1 year old, almost two, when Dr. King was assassinated at the age of 39 in Memphis. What does the King legacy mean to you?
Well, I remember as a kid, you know, more or less reading about him, and it was, and of course, as you get older, you realize that it wasn't just Dr. King; there were so many others. But I guess the legacy of opportunity. When I think about some of the opportunities that I've had, you know, I got an opportunity, for example, to go to LSU to work on a PhD. Well, that would not have happened were it not for the sacrifices of people like Dr. King and so many others. When I read about the Civil Rights Movement and read about how people had to sue just to get admitted to LSU, I didn't have to go through that, and that was because of the sacrifices of people like Dr. King. So I would not clearly be sitting where I'm sitting had it not been for what others have done before me.
The bill that established the Martin Luther King Jr. federal holiday to oversee the observance of today was signed in 1983, November 2nd, by then-President Ronald Wilson Reagan, a bit of an irony, and many Republicans on Capitol Hill opposed the bill, Senator Jesse Helms in particular of North Carolina. He launched a vigorous opposition to the holiday, criticizing Dr. King's opposition to the Vietnam War and accusing him of, quote, espousing action-oriented Marxism. It is amazing now that there is almost no controversy. Perhaps that is a good thing. The holiday was instituted in 1986, and I think today Dr. King is given his due, justifiably, as one of the great Americans of the 20th century.
Yeah, that's interesting, too. And, of course, in President Reagan's case, people also may want to forget some of Reagan's supporters is that the president was initially opposed to the Martin Luther King holiday. And it wasn't until it was clear that the votes were there in Congress that he reversed his position. And if you listen to President Reagan, you know, who was speaking at an elementary school or a high school, I can't remember which, on the first time it was actually celebrated, he spoke as if he had been for it all along.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of speaks to how we've tended to sanitize Dr. King's memory. Dr. King was a controversial person at the time.
Well, it's curious that Jimmy Carter didn't lead the fight for this when he was president from 1977 to 1981, but mm-hmm. people forget that Carter, a Democrat, was an ardent segregationist for much of his career.
The votes also just weren't there. I mean, keep in mind that the effort to make Dr. King's birthday a holiday really started not long after he was assassinated. And so it's a testament to persistence that
right.
they came back year after year after year, and it wasn't until 1983, about 15 years later, that it was enacted into law.
And Jimmy Carter left office almost 13 years after Dr. King was assassinated, and shame on him for having a Democratic majority in both the U.S. House and U.S. Senate and not leading the charge for the holiday. Shame on Jimmy Carter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess you can say that. Of course, Carter had other problems with Congress as well, too.
He did, but history is remembering him kindly as a former president, not so much for his 4 years in office, which had runaway inflation and other problems, as you note, the hostage crisis at the end of his first term, his only term, and he was smashed in his reelection bid, carrying only 6 states, and Jimmy Carter went home to Georgia, and he has lived an exemplary life since. He's almost 90 years old. He will be 90 years old this year on the first day of October. Now, the King holiday, this is an interesting thing. His birthday, of course, is January 15th. We're celebrating it today on January 20th. Next year, we'll celebrate it on January 19th, which is the birthday of Robert E. Lee. Why don't we celebrate it every year on January 15th?
Well, I think that's a matter of convenience because we do that also with the presidents. The federal government for some reason likes to have these long holidays, and now it's just President's Day, but we used to separately celebrate Lincoln's birthday and Washington's birthday. So I think it's a matter of convenience more for federal workers than anything else.
297-5633, 877-217-5757 for Dr. Samuels from Southern University. And we go to Darryl on College Drive. Darryl, you're on with Albert Samuels on WRKF. Good morning, Darryl.
And good morning to you and to your guests. Of course, I want to first of all thank Dr. Samuels for the tremendous service that he does for the community in nurturing the new minds in our community that he is exposed to at Southern University. The question I would have for him and for anybody who could answer it is, why is it that much of the words, much of the speeches, much of the writings of Dr. King, he wrote at least four books that are not even in print, not really available for examination. And why is it that there's such a selective, such a selective thing as to what we're exposed to from Dr. King, and I think we could probably benefit from a lot more release. If your guest could comment on that, that would help me out a lot.
Dr. Samuels, do you have any thoughts about some of Dr. King's writings not being available for the public to read?
I'm not an expert in that, so don't quote me on this. Now, I do know that there have been some issues with the King family, and that has, to some degree, has limited some of the access to some of Dr. King's words. But I'm clearly not an expert in this area, so I'm going to try to limit my comments to that.
297-5633 is your number. Dr. King was born January 15th, 1929, would have been 85 years old. I noted on his real birth date a few days ago that he not only was assassinated at 39, but at 29 he was almost killed in a stabbing incident in New York City. In Harlem, and at a book signing, and he was a man who knew danger and faced tragedy, and ultimately went away far too young. He spent much of his career in the South, of course, born in Atlanta, the famous for the Montgomery bus boycott. But that, Dr. Samuels, was modeled after something that had happened here in Baton Rouge, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, and. And recently, the Baton Rouge bus boycott has gotten a little more attention. But certainly, the Baton Rouge bus boycott was really probably the first example of mass protest, and it was a big deal at the time, and it inspired people in other parts of the country, and certainly the community of Montgomery studied the Baton Rouge bus boycott and try to look at the strengths and weaknesses, you know, and try to learn from it when their bus boycott took place.
And Dr. King came to Baton Rouge, mm-hmm. met with people here at the old Lincoln Theater. Mm-hmm. He walked the streets of our city more than once in mm-hmm. his 39 years, so he is a person who was familiar with the community where we're doing this radio show.
Absolutely.
297-5633, Paul in Magnolia Woods. Paul, good morning. You're on with Dr. Samuels.
Yes, Jim and Dr. Samuels, this is Paul Kemp. And I was I had a fellowship working in Ted Kennedy's office in 1984. Mm-hmm. And I remember my first day of work turned out not to be a first day of work because I arrived there on what would later become Martin Luther King Day, and it was already being observed in Senator Kennedy's office. And Senator Kennedy, of course, was a great proponent of the holiday, but was not successful in getting it established.
And, of course, Senator Kennedy had opposed the aforementioned Jimmy Carter, something that mm-hmm. is unthought of today, that you'd have the most powerful U.S. senator in his party opposing Democrat Jimmy Carter, same party. Mm-hmm. But it happened in 1980, and it didn't work out very well for either Ted Kennedy or Jimmy Carter.
No, it didn't. Jimmy Carter ultimately defeated Ted Kennedy, though there was a very spirited challenge at the Democratic National Convention to Carter's renomination. But like I said, Ronald Reagan then goes on to win 44 states.
And Ted Kennedy, on August 14th, 1980, at the Democratic Convention in Madison Square Garden, he gave, I think, the best convention speech ever. And there have been some good ones from both parties, but he delivered a spellbinder, and he still lost the nomination to Jimmy Carter. But it's never good when the nominee is upstaged by somebody else, and that's what happened in 1980, and Jimmy Carter went down in flames in November against Ronald Wilson Reagan, who was the guy he wanted to run against, by the way. He thought America would reject Reagan. Turned out be much different. We'll talk with Dr. Samuels after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. InksterShow@WRKF.org if you'd like to reach us by email. Michael Farrar producing. Dr. Albert Samuels with us for another segment. Professor of Political Science at Southern University. And today is the holiday for Dr. Martin Luther King, who would have been 85 years old 5 days ago. And Dr. King's holiday has now been celebrated in this country for 19 years. Richard in Lafayette. Good morning, Richard. You're on WRKF.
Good morning, and thank you. I had a question. It's really kind of a curiosity question for Dr. Samuels, and it's regarding Dr. King's speech, which is an incredible piece of oratory, and I'm always surprised at how few people have read it start to finish, as well as other speeches that he had given. And my question is this: did he write those speeches, or did he have a writer for those speeches? Because if he wrote them, it just blows you away.
I'm not sure.
He wrote it. He was accused of borrowing passages for other writings that he had, and he may have, and the evidence indicates he did, but that guy, Dr. Martin Luther King, he could write with the best of them, and he wrote that I Have a Dream speech from start to finish. In fact, at the Willard Hotel in Washington, D.C., where he composed it, I think they actually have the work he did in his room where he was editing parts of it. And, of course, as he got to the stage, he ended up going on the fly and talking about something he had not intended. The I Have a Dream part was extemporaneous. He had delivered it before, but it was not scheduled to be in that speech. But Mahalia Jackson was the one who said, "Tell him about the dream, Martin." And
right. And
he did. And the speech has been timed at 17 minutes. So it goes to show you, and I've been guilty of this too, that sometimes long speeches are not as successful as short ones. And, of course, the Gettysburg Address is a classic example, but I Have a Dream was only 17 minutes, and it was the best speech ever given.
I think absolutely. And to my short speeches, and there was a small little newspaper in Pennsylvania, you know, that they dismissed Lincoln's speech as a silly little speech that would never be remembered, and of course they were wrong. And that paper on the 150th anniversary of the Gettysburg Address played a retraction and said, okay, we were wrong.
297-5633. We're going to talk about this a bit more with Kevin Kane, who's our later guest in the show. But Chris Christie, he delivered a two-hour news conference last week, and he tried to defend himself. Some would say it's indefensible what he did or what his aides did on his behalf, closing down a bridge that caused a traffic snarl for 4 days in New Jersey, because a mayor did not support Chris Christie's reelection bid. How can he survive this, Dr. Samuels?
Well, first of all, nobody gives a two-hour news conference. I'm not sure who his political advisors were, but you go out, you say, and you minimize the damage, and then you go away. I mean, he's as a consultant, you know, you're thinking that the longer you stay out there, the more likely you are to make a mistake. That's the first thing. Well, to some degree, he has to sort of hope that, because he has lost control of the events, you know, because the Democrats in the New Jersey Assembly are going to do the investigations. He has to ride it out. I think his hope is that by 2016, when the primaries begin, this matter will be long forgotten. But he certainly cannot be seen as obstructing the investigation in any way. And basically, for his benefit. Hopefully, there's no smoking gun in any of these emails or documents that links him personally to these events. Because so far, he has adamantly said that he did not order this. He did not order these bridge closings, and he was not involved in the effort to cover it up. And so, hopefully, that will bear itself out.
Well, only in politics could a guy who looks like Chris Christie, and I'm hesitant to ridicule the guy, as some have. In fact, Bill Maher, who's been on this show, calls him Governor Fat Fatty. But only in politics could a guy approaching 400 pounds be characterized as a tough guy. He's obviously not very tough, and the way he's handled this doesn't show toughness at all, does it?
Well, you know, it really does damage his brand, because the brand he was marketing to people was as a guy who was a quote-unquote big guy, not just in terms of his size, but given some of the pettiness we've seen in Washington, you know, he was marketed as a guy who gets things done. You know, he can cross party lines. You know, he can work with the president on what's needed for his state, and if we only had a guy like that, you know, maybe we could actually get some things done in Washington. And so this incident presents a very different picture of Christie or his administration as being petty and being vindictive, and so that's a problem for him.
Well, his image has been tarnished to the point where he may have difficulty retaining his job as governor of New Jersey. He's been reelected, but this scandal has legs, and for some it's hard to believe, Dr. Samuels, that these aides could have acted without his consent.
Yeah, I think that's one reason why Democrats are really pushing that, because it is pretty open secret in New Jersey as to how close Chris Christie is to his aide. And so some people are finding it hard to believe that this close-knit group would have cut the governor out of the loop on this.
He has said that New Orleans is his favorite American city. He spent his honeymoon there. And looking at his poundage, New Orleans might not be the best destination for Chris Christie.
I think you have a point there.
Well, here's, you know, he also says he's been to 170 Bruce Springsteen concerts, who, of course, is one of the most famous New Jersey natives. And Bruce Springsteen, along with Jimmy Fallon, they've produced a YouTube video that millions have seen and heard. It's based on Springsteen's 1975 classic, Born to Run. Here's how it sounds. Jimmy Fallon and Bruce Springsteen. Do we have it, Michael? Let's give it a listen if we can. All right. Mike? He's shaking his head. We have it, but where is it?
Ladies and gentlemen, Bruce Springsteen!
Stuck in traffic on the GWB. They shut down the toll booths of glory, 'cause we didn't endorse Christie. Sprung from cages on highway, now we got three lanes closed, so Jersey, get your ass in line. Oh! We gotta get out, but we can't. We're stuck in Governor Chris Christie's Fort Lee, New Jersey traffic jam. Yeah! wrap my legs around your mighty rims and relieve your stressful condition. You got Wall Street master stuck cheek to cheek with blue collar truckers, and man, I really gotta take a leak, but I can't. I'm stuck in Governor Chris Christie's Fort Lee, New Jersey traffic jam.
Hard to believe this man, Chris Christie, could somehow rebound and be nominated for the Republican nomination for president in 2016 or to win it. But he apparently will keep on trying, and he may also have to face a grand jury or two regarding this terrible catastrophe. Does Bobby Jindal benefit from this, Albert Samuels?
Potentially, and not just Bobby, just Bobby Jindal, but just every Republican who was hopeful, who was looking at running for president and seeing Chris Christie as a front runner, benefits from this, including Bobby Jindal. Even though I think that Bobby Jindal still,
oh, go ahead,
cross, because he's. He is clearly at the rear of the pack right now in terms of the people who are aiming at the White House right now. But certainly any Republican who was looking at 2016, you know, in some way benefits from the fact that right now Chris Christie has some problems. Now, it is 2014, early 2014, so there's still a lot of time for him to recover from this. But certainly any Republican who is running for president right now benefits.
Any Republican running for president benefits. So if Christie was considered by many to be the front runner, is there a front runner now?
Well, I mean, you would have to think that people like Rand Paul, for example, who probably would be somewhere near the top of the second tier, because Christie had a pretty sizable lead, and then you get down to people like Rand Paul, who would probably be the most immediate beneficiary. Now, the problem with this for Republicans, at least nationally, is that right now Chris Christie was the guy that a lot of people were looking at as one having the best probability, at least right now, of not only gaining Republican support, but reaching out to those all-important independents.
Doc in Baker. Doc, good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Samuels.
Good morning. Do you think the news media would ever going to get on the Benghazi and the IRS story as much as they're getting on the Bridgegate story?
You don't think they did?
No, sir. Not at all. No. The other night, CNN, Anderson Cooper spent 24 minutes on the Bridgegate thing and 3 minutes on Benghazi. And four Americans were killed in Benghazi.
Well, okay. Hold on. Benghazi was September 11th of 2012. Now, more than 200 Americans were killed in Beirut when Ronald Reagan was president. How much attention did that get from the news media?
A heck of a lot more than Benghazi got.
I doubt it very seriously.
Oh, no, I doubt it. I'm certain it did.
All right. Well,
again, a bridge. You know, these people, the news media needs to come to Baton Rouge to cross the Mississippi River Bridge in the morning to find out what traffic is about.
Well, what if somebody closed a lane on the Mississippi River Bridge to make a political point? Wouldn't that be a story?
Well, it depends on who did it, I guess.
I think it'd be a story no matter who did it.
Well, no, not really. What about many, many, many years ago, a governor built a bridge that went out in the middle of a cane field, and everybody laughed about it. It was funny.
Well, and that was Jimmy Davis.
Correct.
Okay. And he was a Democrat.
Yeah.
Okay.
And again, it was funny. Ha ha ha! It was funny. if Bobby Jindal did that, they would bring everybody against him.
All right, so you say the news media are partisan, and this is this Christie story is evidence of that.
Most definitely.
Okay, Doc. I appreciate your comments. Thank
sure.
you. Thank you, sir. Dr. Samuels?
I think that the Benghazi issue and the IRS issue have been covered. I think they've been covered quite extensively. Now, maybe not to the degree that some of the president's detractors would like them to be, but that's because there's no scandal, in the sense that there was no direct White House impropriety. Yes, there were some mistakes that were made in Benghazi, but that's been reported.
Okay. Did want to talk to you before we go to Kevin Kane in the next segment, Dr. Samuels. Obviously, St. George is going to be a big story in 2014. The Advocate named it the biggest story in Baton Rouge for 2013. John Kennedy, the state treasurer, was on this show last Friday, and he stated that this is all about the schools, and this is how he characterized the school system in East Baton Rouge Parish.
Our public schools in Baton Rouge suck. I mean, that's just a fact.
Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, the treasurer's wrong. By the governor's own standards, East Baton Rouge Parish is a C-rated district. Last time I checked, C is not failing. And that doesn't mean that everything is fine and hunky-dory, but it is a C district. And so, first of all, we need to tell the truth about what's really happening. And happening. That's the first thing. Secondly, even if education, I think education is primarily driving the St. George effort, incorporation has nothing to do with getting the school district. Even if they succeed in getting the signatures, and that's a real question about the legalities of it, that it can still be challenged even if they win a vote. That still doesn't not necessarily mean they get a school district. They will still have to go to the legislature to get the two-thirds approval to get a school district. And actually, the arguments against creating the school district would actually be strengthened by their incorporation.
Well, Dr. Samuels, we thank you for joining us on MLK Day. Look forward to talking with you a few more times this year. Always a pleasure to visit with Albert Samuels of Southern University.
Thank you so much, and it's a pleasure to be on your show.
Take care. And we'll return in 90 seconds with Kevin Kane on WRKI. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. We're joined by Kevin Kane, president of the Pelican Institute for Public Policy. He founded this group in 2008. Its mission is to advance sound policies based on principles of free enterprise, individual liberty, and limited government. Good morning, Kevin Kane.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Doing well. Good to hear your voice again. And obviously, we're off to a big start in the political realm in 2014.
Yeah, I was listening to your last conversation.
Well, let's start before we get to Louisiana events and people. What about what about Governor Christie? Is he toast, or can he survive this?
I think it's a little early to say that he's toast, but I do think it's a problem. I think for one thing, it's always a problem when somebody makes a mistake that sort of verifies people's kind of worst suspicions about someone. I mean, the kind of rap on Christie was that he was kind of a mean guy, a bully, and I think a lot of that, well, I've always thought that was exaggerated by his critics, but when he does something like that, it kind of, it make it, for some people, it will confirm their worst thoughts about him. And the other thing is it's an easy thing to understand. You know, you have people talking about kind of how much attention this has received versus, say, the IRS scandal and some other things. and that, you know, there may be something to that. But I think one of the problems with this is, even though it may be relatively small potatoes compared to, say, misusing the IRS, this is so easy to understand. You know, everybody, or most everybody, you know, commutes to work, and many people have to go over bridges or things like that. And so people understand what a massive inconvenience that is, and just how wrong it is to shut down lanes of traffic for political payback. And then for me, I mean, I'm from the Northeast, and I mean, it is a nightmare to get stuck on one of those bridges for an extended period of time. There's just no way to get out of it once you're in that traffic. And so, again, I mean, you know, we don't know that he knew about it. He may well have known nothing about it. And so, if that's the case, then I think over time this will fade away, but it's certainly a problem for now.
Another story that occurred late last week, a chief element of President Obama's attempt to overhaul U.S. surveillance will not work, according to some leaders of Congress, including Dianne Feinstein, chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Democrat from California. She says, "I think it's a very difficult thing. The whole purpose of this program is to provide instantaneous information to be able to disrupt any plot that may be taking place." The president is suggesting that the private sector might be better involved in this. Could something like this be feasible?
I don't really know, but it's, you know, it's an interesting question. I'll have to do more reading on that. I mean, but one of the things I find real interesting about this whole area is that many of kind of our policy debates fall into these sort of predictable left-right splits, where most everybody on the left takes one position, most everybody on the right takes another. This issue, the debate around this issue, is real interesting because it doesn't quite work out that way. You know, on the right, you've got more libertarian types who are very opposed to this, and more kind of traditional conservatives or neoconservatives who feel differently. And then on the left, you've got splits. And so just that in itself makes this, I think, a fascinating debate.
Okay. The election year is here for U.S. Senator Mary Landrieu. What are your thoughts about whether she is in danger of being unseated?
Well, I mean, she's certainly in danger just by virtue of the fact that she's a Democrat in a state that's really, you know, gone heavily Republican. And but it's certainly not a foregone conclusion that she's going to lose. I mean, she knows how to win elections, and she's developed a lot of relationships over the years. And there are a number of Republicans who have supported her over the years. So she's a formidable opponent. I do think that the Obamacare mess really does hurt her. I mean, I figured it would when she was one of the deciding votes in favor of Obamacare, but then, you know, you don't know over the years, will people just sort of forget about that? But I think the disastrous rollout of Obamacare has really hurt her and will probably be the you know, the primary issue over the coming months. I'm not going to predict the outcome one way or another, but I think it'll be a real close election, and who knows, it could be, you know, the election that decides which party's in control of the Senate. So I think the whole nation will be watching.
Well, Bill Cassidy, the congressman from Baton Rouge, looks like he's going to have company and some legitimate company. The people who are running against him are certainly running or giving every indication of running viable campaigns. And Paul Hollis and Rob Manus. Can Cassidy win with... Well, can he get the Republican nod from these other guys if they're in the race chipping away at him?
Yeah, I mean, the potential for that being a problem for him certainly exists. I mean, you know, Manus, I don't think he really has gotten much traction, and he hasn't raised a lot of money. Hollis just jumped in, so it's too early to tell. I think it would have been a real problem for Cassidy if they... kind of a bigger name Republican had jumped in with kind of strong, with who, you know, somebody who had years of building up relationships among kind of real strong conservatives. I think that would have been a problem for Cassidy. But But that really hasn't happened. I mean, Hollis is a relative newcomer, and this is really, you know, I mean, he's never been elected to anything here. So I think that bodes well for Cassidy, and I doubt that there'll be more than a nuisance to him, but who knows? There's a lot of time left.
Mm-hmm. Now, U.S. Senator David Vitter, do you think he will run for governor?
I don't have any inside knowledge on that. If I had to bet, I probably would bet that he is going to, just because there's been so much talk about it. You know, you have to think that ultimately means something. Of course, you know, what happens in these Senate elections could influence decision, although it sounds like he's going to announce his decision really before then. So my inclination is to think that he probably will, but who knows? Be interesting to see.
Now, he had representatives at the Ethics Commission last week seeking a ruling that he did not get to allow contributions of more than $100,000 to political parties, which would mean the Republican Party. He says he's got some folks who are ready to contribute in excess of $100,000 per year to his election pursuits. So that would look like he might be flirting very seriously with running for governor.
No, absolutely, and I'll tell you too. That, I mean, that the issue of campaign fundraising is an interesting one, and I probably go against the grain here in that I really am in favor of kind of opening that up and just letting people give pretty much whatever they want. I mean, the reality is money finds its way into the political process. You can never completely stop that from happening. And because we have this kind of complex web of rules, the money, you know, people, there's always a new way to create some sort of new organization that is ultimately doing campaign work. And I think it would just be a lot simpler and easier, and we could make it more transparent by just letting people give whatever they want to whoever they want.
Jim of New Orleans asks, Chris Christie's knowledge or approval aside, does anyone question how shutting down lanes of a bridge approach and causing major traffic jams could ever be considered a legitimate traffic study?
that's a good question. I guess we'll find out. I mean, we haven't heard the last of this.
Brent Denham Springs says, I found some of your remarks, my remarks, regarding Governor Christie and his weight completely uncalled for. It's hard not to address the man and certainly his fitness, and I don't mean to use that as a pun, but his fitness for office. There are health issues involving a man as large as he is. Could he withstand the rigors of being president of the United States?
Yeah, well, you know, that could be a legitimate question, and just even as a, you know, whether it should matter or not, it's just a fact of life that, you know, the people who win elections tend to be physically attractive, you know, taller and, you know, full heads of hair and that sort of thing. So I do think somebody with a big weight problem, it's certainly not going to help them in a tough campaign.
And when we look in the television age, I guess, which started with Eisenhower, you had Eisenhower and Kennedy.
Right.
And Johnson and Nixon and Ford and Carter and Reagan and Bush 1 and Clinton and Bush 2 and Obama. And the only one who had any kind of a weight problem, and it wasn't as significant as Governor Christie, was Bill Clinton. And as you know, when he got in office, he addressed that. He was not a large man when he ran for re-election.
Right. No, absolutely. I mean, his weight problem was never anything like Christie's, and he's very telegenic and really a sort of master of that medium. So I don't think that problem. I don't think Clinton had a problem with that.
Dan downtown. Dan, you're on with Kevin Kane.
Yes. Would your idea of allowing everyone to just give whatever they can to a campaign, would that impinge upon the free speech of all those poor people who can't do that?
Well, no, I don't think so, because we say the poor people who can't give millions of dollars, I mean, they still have the right of free speech. And and the ability to participate in the process, and they can organize and be involved in the process. I mean, yes, it you know, a millionaire has advantages over a poor person, but is that not the case now? I mean, millionaires are very much involved in the political process, and these different limits does not change that at all. It just complicates it all. But they still, anybody with money who wants to spend it on an election spends it, because there's no way you can prevent that.
What's your take, if you followed it at all, regarding the move by people in the community of St. George to become a city of their own?
I don't have a strong opinion on it, because I live in New Orleans, and I've just, you know, I've followed it to some degree, but I haven't really studied it. I mean, I generally lean in favor, without sort of having studied the legalities of it, I mean, I'm generally in favor of allowing people to, if they feel like the government, you know, that's running their schools and that they're paying taxes to now is not doing a good job of it, and they can't simply, you know, vote in a new slate of people, that, I mean, if they have that ability to incorporate and create a separate system of governance that suits them better, then I'm generally inclined to support their ability to do that.
Well, Kevin, you have an event coming up right here in this community. Kevin's based in New Orleans, but he spends a lot of time in Baton Rouge, and you'll have some notables joining you.
Yes, actually, this is tomorrow at Jubin's Restaurant. We're having a luncheon panel. We're calling it Market-Based Solutions to Louisiana's Environmental Challenges. And critics have often argued that kind of free market policies, which we tend to support, that those policies lead to environmental degradation. And so what we want to do is have some folks come in and talk about how market-based approaches can offer Louisiana both a strong and healthy environment and long-term economic growth. So we're going to have Bill Cassidy will be one of our speakers, Garrett Graves from the Coastal Protection and Restoration Authority, and then we've got a couple folks coming from D.C., Ian Murray from the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and Alex Bosmowski from the Energy and Enterprise Initiative. And Alex actually just co-authored a report that we're actually publishing today called Risk, Reward, and Revolution, which will be looking at the benefits of globalizing our natural gas revolution here and exporting LNG. So I think it's going to be a fascinating discussion, and they'll each kind of be presenting their ideas about what sort of free market or market-based policies would be good for the environment and good for the economy. Folks who would like to attend can go to the Eventbrite website and just look up Pelican Institute and buy a ticket. I'll mention that this is probably going to sell out today. We've got a limited number of seats left. So anybody who would like to attend, I'd suggest you get online and do that quickly. But I think it's going to be a really interesting, stimulating discussion, and hope some of your listeners will join us.
Here's a question from Tim, Kevin. In the Senate race, which issue other than Obamacare will be the most prominent one?
You know, that's tough to say. I think that Obamacare will dwarf the others in all likelihood. I mean, obviously, energy policy is a big deal here in Louisiana. But Mary Landrieu has, over the years, she has a pretty good reputation on those issues, and has support from people in that industry. I do think it was interesting. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal a couple weeks ago by Kimberly Strassel that talked about the support and help Senator Landrieu has given to some senators around the country who are, you know, on the opposite sides of those issues, and maybe that will emerge as an issue. I don't know, but I really do think that that the healthcare issue is going to dwarf all the others.
As a conservative, what does this day, MLK Day, mean to you?
Well, that's a great question. I'd like to think that, you know, the importance of Martin Luther King and the role he played in this country is something that is not kind of confined to political dispositions or parties or anything like that. I really, he people who don't recognize the man's greatness have become more and more of a fringe in this country, and I think that's a good thing. You know, he's one of those people who his brilliance and the way that he articulated his message is something that I think 100 years from now, 200 years from now, people will look back at.
Thank you, Kevin Kane. Thanks for joining us today. We'll be back tomorrow. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.